and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is, I wrote down the line this time, a vision of Mexiconic beauty. It's Joel.
What the hell is a vision of Mexiconic beauty?
It's a line from the movie we're going to talk about.
Mexiconic?
They say Africanic in the movie.
Oh, I see. You're adapting it to me. Okay. Well, I'll take it.
It'd be cultural appropriation to call you Africanic.
That's true. Yeah, Mexiconic beauty. Yoo-hoo!
Yeah. So this is a... Here they are. A secret special episode? I don't know. I still don't know how to intro these ones. But, so this is... we're going to talk about this one on the legendary Pam Grier. Because I realized we have like 6 months left in the show, and I kind of realized, oh, we have to talk about Pam at some point, and not just Jackie Brown, like a whole, because Pam deserves it. And so I brought back MVP, fan favorite, Melanie Daniels.
Yeah, because I had to be on to talk about Pam.
Yeah. Did she come up in one episode we talked about already? Maybe?
I think that we talked about her in an episode just because I think Jackie Brown got brought up or something. I can't remember, but you guys have talked about her briefly, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, we did the Jackie Brown one with, what's that guy? Travis Wood. Now he's like, he's on like Pure Cinema podcast and shit now. He's making it big.
Oh, he's the big time. I didn't realize.
Yeah, he's on a Albert Kane podcast.
Oh. That's the dream.
That's the dream. That's it.
Yeah.
Or Rob, you know, Rob.
Rob G?
Yeah, Rob G. Thank you.
Yeah. With Rob G, you can actually talk. Elric won't let you talk. Mm-hmm. He'll never hear this out. I don't know how he hears that.
Oh, you hope he never hears it now. Now he's just like, I don't even know this guy's talking shit about me.
Yeah, but, starting with our guest, Melanie, how did you first hear of Pam Grier? Can you even remember?
Like, I think it was probably Jackie Brown because of the time that came out, how old I was. That's probably my first introduction. And it's like, like, writing out my notes for this, I was thinking, it's like, she would have been one of the first, like, strong lead female characters that I saw in that movie, which is pretty cool and crazy to think about.
Hmm. You mean, like, one of the first ever you've
that, seen? Like, whenever I was actually on the grid that I could remember? Yeah. Because it's, like, stuff like, I mean... Princess Leia, stuff like you see when you're a kid over and over and over, and it's just like you can't even pinpoint the moment when you saw it. But for Jackie Brown, it's like I remember the first time I saw it and it just clicked, you know? Like, that's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't even remember how I first heard of her. It's just kind of like when I learned, I think probably when I got into exploitation movies in high school, you know, like Jack Hill comes up, obviously, and it's kind of like Coffee and Foxy Brown. It's like, okay, I'll watch those movies. Mm-hmm. And just like, that's probably like my first introduction. And so like, I can't even pinpoint the win. It's kind of like when I first learned about exploitation movies, it's kind of like, oh yeah, Pam Grier. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's what kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah.
J-Dog?
Before we were recording, you guys were talking about having done homework for this movie, probably watching other Pam Grier movies, and I'll tell you, Jackie Brown is when I realized she was somebody that I should know who it is, but I was familiar with her before that, because of, and I'm very embarrassed to say, I'd seen three other movies with her in it previously. Mars Attacks, which I still really like. Bill and Ted's Excellent Bogus,
which is also great,
where she's just a suit being worn by George Carlin.
Above the Law, and Seagal movie.
No, I hadn't. I've actually seen that afterwards, but the last one was Escape from L.A., where I believe she's a person who used to be a man and something like I can't remember. It was just a weird, like, who is this lady who keeps showing up? It's like Jackie Brown, like, oh, okay. What else? Oh, she's got a whole history.
Like, she's very important, yeah.
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 Well, don't I feel embarrassed?
That's fair. I mean, you would have been... So, like, the earliest movie was bogus, right? So you would have been, like, 12-ish?
Let's see. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is 1991. Yeah, I mean, 10, yeah. Yeah, probably 11 or... Oh. 12, watching on a VHS.
No, not in a theater?
I don't know if I saw Bill and Ted 2 in the theater.
I remember being... I was scared of everything as a kid, so I was scared of the Grim Reaper on the box art.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Mm. Yeah, I submitted something stupid and no one responded. Okay.
That you were a scared little kid?
No, I remember that VHS cover, though. It was like a white background, both of them smushed up against the thing. I thought it looked cool. But, you know, I respect that it scared you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was scared of even, like, the album cover to... the cover to, like, Nightmare Before Christmas. I was scared. Yeah, and then I... Yeah. That's a story for another time. So,
Yeah, I was scared by the album cover for Blonde on Blonde. No, wait, what?
Yeah, so, the movie that we kind of, Melanie and I decided on initially, it was going to be either Foxy Brown or Friday Foster. And my usual go-to is, which one is less talked about?
Yeah.
Because that should, you know, in theory, provide more, and then... After watching Friday Foster again, it's like...
There's a reason.
Foxy Brown. Yeah, there's a reason. No one talks about Friday Foster.
Yeah, hey, no. I, to be clear, because I sent... Actually, while I was watching it, I sent Spencer a message, and I was like, whoa, I forgot... It's not that I forgot the tone. I knew that it wasn't as gritty as the films that she did before. Like, I was aware of that, but I did not... And it's, you know, based off a comic strip. It's very... I say it's lighter. I mean, there's still a lot of violence, but it's not nearly as much as her other films. And I just didn't... I don't know. I did not remember it being this tone. I don't know how else to put it. And it's not bad. Mm. I kind of like that there was something out there for kids at the time that they could... Because it's like, you probably didn't want to take your kid to watch Coffee or Foxy Brown's. A little intense, especially like... Foxy Brown gets dark. Like, it gets so... I love that movie, but it's a super bummer right in the middle of it, so it's rough. And this is lighter, so I like that airy tone, but just not what I was expecting. Even though I'd seen it before, I don't know what... Maybe as a kid I thought it was a little bit more badass. I don't know.
It's definitely, like, feel like a response. This might get a little pretentious, like a response to her other movies being, like, meaner and grittier. Like, the Jack Hill ones in particular. Like, he was, like... Jack Hill, like, was the master of delivering what Corman wanted, but then he would have, like, another layer. But there's still that core of, like, it's gonna be violent and unpleasant and, you know, push things a little too far. And this is, like, her being like, no, I want to be in something that isn't, that doesn't require me to, you know, be in a prison or be, like, put myself in, like, bad positions. Like, just, like, have a fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, she's still in a shower with, you know, Carl Weathers spying on her. So that's still there.
Yeah, and, like, I think most of my goodwill towards Friday Foster came from... I remembered the cast, because the cast of that movie is kind of fucking incredible.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Yeah.
It's the... Because if you haven't seen Friday Foster, it's Pam Grier, Yaphet Kotto, Scatman Crothers, Falmouth Rasulala, Carl Weathers, Eartha Kitt, Julius Harris. There's like a couple other people.
Godfrey Cambridge.
Godfrey Cambridge. So like that cast alone is like, oh yeah, that's a great movie.
And but, honestly, I don't. That's not even everybody. Like the whole cast, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Carl Weathers looks the same. There's like maybe a little more gray hair, and that's the only difference now.
Wait, what do you mean in Star Wars?
I haven't seen Mandalorian, but like from Arrested Development era, like he looks the same.
He looks like a fresh faced, like kind of like a little bit like acne wasn't that far behind him in this movie. Like he looks super young. Like I think he looks younger than he does in Rocky. Like what year was that? Mm-hmm. The year after?
Yeah.
So I guess he was younger, but like, it's because of the way he's doing the role. It's like, does he? It's so surprising how big he got after that. I mean, he's just a straight up almost silent in this thing.
Yeah. I put in my notes. He's like a Terminator.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
In really, really cool suits, though. His suits are amazing.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I love the suits. That's just the fashion for Aya Foster is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's at the party where you first see Senator Hart,
mm-hmm.
like, Pam is wearing, like, this white gown, but she's wearing, like, a coat cape with it.
Yeah, with, like, that, like sequins on the the edges.
Yeah, it's like it's crazy, and it's like no one ever wore that, but like it's a comic book movie, so it's like yeah, whatever. It fits with the movie.
She wanted to wear something that would catch everybody's eyes, and it worked, you know.
Yeah.
Now, why Yaphet Kotto is dressed to the nines the whole time, I don't understand, but I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, but his character is so weird in this, like it. I don't know. I feel like he was very underwritten. And maybe that's my problem is, like, the story's not very strong. Like, it's very forgettable. I remember everything that happened, but it's like I had seen it before. And watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. There's just not a lot for them to do.
Yeah, like, even, like, there's a part in early on when Pam is at her the office, and her boss, played by Julius Randle's the NBA player, Julius Harris. I'm still upset the Celtics didn't draft Julius Randle. They got fucking Jared Sullinger instead. That no one cares here, but played Julius Harris, and she's just like, and Pam's just playing with like a magnifying glass the whole time, and it's like it's very playful and fun, but like it's a kid's impression of like, oh, there's not that much to do in the movie.
Yeah, like she's not even really reacting to what people are saying. She's just playing with it, like she's just doing her own thing, and it is very cute, and like I love it. But
man, this like
this is like a different. They, you know, they put in the intrigue, but it feels like, I mean, it's a movie about this reporter who sees something and she gets a little too caught up, and it's very much like you know, a Lois Lane mm-hmm. situation or an April O'Neil, if you want to go into my personal preference. Except there's not really a Ninja Turtle or a Superman to save them. Yaphet Kotto is kind of a Ninja Turtle when you look at him sideways. But
yeah, I see that.
He really only gets into the action that one time across the rooftops, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say the end. Everyone kind of has a hand in it, but yeah.
Everyone has a gun.
Yeah, and on the rooftops, there's a line that I think is supposed to be funny, but it doesn't work, at least for me. Where he says, "What am I doing here?"
Oh, and I laughed.
No, that was just the
act. I laughed so hard though.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense for his character, because we're all kind of like, what are you doing? And then he finally gets to it, it's like, wait a minute, am I hoping to sleep with her or something? Like, why am I putting myself in physical danger like this? Oh, well.
Yeah, but like, but there's no other like breaking the fourth wall moment like that. So it does really, for me, it just really sticks out like, that's weird. maybe have a couple more moments of him kind of breaking the fourth wall. But, yeah. I don't know, like, because I watched this a couple days after watching Scream, Blackula Scream,
mm-hmm.
and Scream, Blackula Scream, like, that has a lot more, like, it's less, I think in some ways it's also kind of lighter and softer in certain ways, but there's, like, a real metaphor of, like, vampirism and addiction and, like, stuff like that, like, affecting, you know, ghettos in that movie, where, like, he's basically, like, a cult lord, drug lord, and in this movie, it's like, oh, there's, like, vague black power references and politics, but it never really goes too deep, and it's just, like, after watching Blackula Scream, it's kind of like, oh, there's this, it's kind of, like, thematically even light, where it's, like, there's not as much stuff there.
Yeah, whenever I was trying to look up just different stuff on this movie in particular, because there's, again, a lot of people don't talk about this one. There's not as much out there, at least to read. And it, like, there's, like, it might have even been Wikipedia. I don't know, because I was clicking all over, but there was, like, a section where it was going through all the themes, and I was like, it is very surprising to me that anyone took the time to write about these themes within this movie, because they are so barely touched upon. It's like, yeah, they're there, especially the end is not too subtle with what it's trying to say, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. And, like, the, because it talked about in a Wikipedia thing, it does break down, like black capitalism, which, like, there's a black millionaire and the little, not the son.
Her brother, yeah.
Her little brother, and he's like, it's just black capitalism, and it's like, okay, and they comment on it, it's like, but there's not enough to really
analyze yeah.
that. It's a slip service.
It's bizarre. Yeah, it's like, he says that line, so they wrote about it. It's, I don't know, it's very bizarre to me. It just seems like an odd movie to do that with, but I don't know. Yeah. Not a great example
although,
of.
Yeah, but, had either of you heard of the Fry Foster comic strip before this movie?
Yeah, I knew that it was, well, it's, I don't know where I heard about it, but I knew it was based off of a comic strip. And that would have had to have been in relation to the movie, though. At some, I don't know what I read, but it was way before we talked about doing this.
Oh, okay. Cause it,
where is it from? Where is the comic
I think Chicago?
From?
It's, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Apparently Chicago, it lasted 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe technically this is like the first comic book movie, comic strip movie. I can't think of anything else before this.
I mean, you know, they had Batman and Superman serials.
Serials, yeah, but not like feature film. I guess Batman 66, would that?
Yeah.
I guess that would count, and then Bat Pussy, the porno from the ad.
Yeah, that definitely
can. Yeah, that's canon, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fry Foster, I guess, is the third one.
You know, I don't, when it comes to comic strips, I'm not nearly as familiar as I am with, you know, actual
yeah.
graphic novel or comic book.
Did properties. You guys used to read yes, the later. Funny papers? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. I have a, this is another dumb admission. I would cut them out and paste them on construction paper and make, like, little, like, comic books of peanuts, and just mm-hmm. one full of peanuts from, like, a whole month.
Oh, yeah. No, I would, like, I would cut them out. Me and my brother, my middle brother and my stepsisters, we would cut them out, but we would read them every week. Like, it's funny. Like, that's not that long ago, but that feels like a billion years ago. It's so crazy that was something that to be excited about.
Hmm. Yeah. Like, I would staple the papers together, so it's like I'm reading a comic book, too. But I'm pretty sure my parents threw them away after, like, a day or two.
Oh, that would have been a cool thing to discover, like, if they had those somewhere in a box. Just all those old comic strips.
I would bet money my parents threw all that shit away, like, as soon as I wasn't looking. But, yeah, Joel, did you have any any comic strip experience like that?
No, I was too busy driving my Harley and drinking beer.
Okay, cool guy.
I couldn't do anything like that in the newspaper. I had a family. We had a seven people in our family household. Like, I would have been murdered by one of my siblings, or possibly my father.
You're a family that respected the paper.
Who also enjoyed the funnies. Yes, exactly. Somebody inked over the family circus.
No, that's not a loss.
We loved Not Me.
I wouldn't color over them, but I definitely took like Silly Putty and peeled it off where you could see the picture from the ink.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Joel, I get the feeling you maybe like this movie more than me and Melanie, so defend yourself.
It just felt like a super fun adventure with like I said, the Lois Lane, April O'Neil thing. I like that really appeals to me, like the reporter, because that's also like Tintin, also reporter, right? Getting into these adventures and like being so curious as to that one part where she like follows Carl
Weathers.
It
makes no sense.
After the funeral, chasing him down in the hearse, and then follows him into an abandoned building. Like, what do you
think
is going
to happen?
And then
he chases her. Like, he's hiding from her, and then he tackles, and then chases her.
I was telling Sarah, if I was Carl Weathers, I would wait just inside the door, and when she walked in, stab her. Because there's no reason to hide.
No, it's insane.
She walked into an abandoned building.
And he hides several stages in that chase, though. It's bizarre. But I mean, I do enjoy it. It's just crazy.
Yeah. I just think it's a lot of fun and it's light. Like, on a personal level, seeing Yaphet Kotto doing as much, like, action as he had to do, like, I'm just not familiar with that. Like, you see him in The Running Man, and he looks like he ate about six sandwiches before he went on set. You know, and not because of his body. I just mean because, you know, he looks like he's not in the kind of shape where you would have to run around in this thing. He's you know, when it's not a stuntman, it's him.
even an Alien, like, he's a big boy. Like, he's never petite at any point.
Yeah he comes off as like powerful in this, which is cool.
but
of course,
like, Wicked Movies always says, like, in 70s movies, fat meant tough. And, like, he definitely comes off as, like, oh, yeah, he's just, like, a tough guy because he's a little bigger.
What? He's wearing awesome suits. What else do you want?
Again, the clothing in this is... The wardrobe is so good.
Mm. Yeah, it's, like...
And
like,
I think Pam Grier is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that the fashion in this rivals, like, 80s era Almodovar, like, in Matador and shit like that. But the director Arthur Marx, he died in November, and he's pretty prolific in his time. He did Detroit 9000, Bucktown, another Pam Grier movie, JD's Revenge, which we might do on here.
Maybe. Oh wow!
It's a pretty cool, interesting movie. He did The Monkey Hustle, the other Rudy Ray Moore movie. The one that's not directed by his friends, by like anyone in his circle, is kind of like his mainstream movie that no one talks about, probably for a reason. And this crazy movie called The Roommates that needs to be seen to be experienced. But Arthur Marx, he was kind of like a go-to B-picture guy at the time. But J.D.'s Revenge is one of the few like horror, like ghost horror movies of the like Black Station era. But that was it. I also want to mention Arthur Marx because like he, like if you're into like these movies, like he's a name that will pop up a whole bunch. So like the like this like tonally, like you were getting it earlier, this movie's kind of weird because like parts of it feels like a TV show, Like, it could be like an episode of, not an episode, but sometimes it feels like it's this, like, a bunch of episodes of a show is kind of strung together.
It's funny that you say that. Are you, yeah, because on the Brown Sugar app, and if you want to watch these films, you can subscribe to Amazon.com, and they have a channel called Brown Sugar, and Friday Foster, there are commercial breaks.
Commercial breaks.
It's like probably, what, 15 seconds of just black screen that comes up?
It's definitely
because it's not like, just fade to black.
Oh, did something go?
Yeah, the first time it happened, I got up and I like pause play. I'm like, what is happening? And then it just kept doing that. It was like, okay. And then I tried to look to see if this was a thing. It was like, no one's talking about it, so I guess it's just how this one's presented. It was so bizarre, but it felt very much like it was like a serialized thing. It was funny.
Oh, okay. But like, so it feels like a TV movie, like TV show of the era, but at the same time,
a pilot,
because like it was like a common thing of TV movie secret pilot, like Kolchak had two. There's that amazing Leonard Nimoy TV movie where he's a psychic NASCAR driver who solves crimes.
Yeah, nobody liked that one.
I love that one. Well, I like that one.
Nope. Hold on, let me get somebody on the phone here.
Okay.
Hey, did you like that? Oh, it sucked. Okay, see.
It should have been a series.
It's an authority.
Yeah, but but like the thing that makes this movie weird is like there's random nudity, just for sake of like, oh, it's rated R, just because there's boobs, and that's kind of it.
I didn't see any random nudity.
What are you talking about?
I'm very upset. Where did you see random nudity in this movie?
I watched it on Amazon Video.
So the same place we watched it.
Did yours?
Yeah.
But you didn't have commercial breaks?
No.
Oh, yeah. You would have had time to get up, get a drink, go to the bathroom, come back, get back into the picture.
That's weird.
I didn't have that. Like, there was... Yeah, there was, like, this, like, there's a shower sequence where, like, you see her boobs, and then and there's like at the model.
In the version we had, there were no. It was not like, I mean, she was in the shower, but it didn't like show the parts that would normally be
featured.
Yeah, or considered inappropriate for a young audience.
Yeah, ours was very kid friendly.
Interesting. Oh, weird. Except for all the stuff.
I'm just saying, compared to like Coffee, I would like you could take your kid to see this for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, let's start this podcast over. I got to see this nudity. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, because like the one I have, it's just like there's nudity at random parts where it's like, oh, this is just so you have an R rating or whatever. Because the rest of it, nothing really is that mature. Or like, whatever. It just like feels like a TV movie, like I was saying. So it's like it just like they threw in adult content just for sake of like, oh, it's a feature film, so I guess we can get away with it.
So it's like, what's it called, Mulholland Drive, where he's like, well, it's a movie now, lesbians.
Yeah. Okay. But Joel, do you think the plot comes together? Like, can you... Like,
no.
Okay.
hold on. No, I don't think it comes together in a way that makes sense. The way they think it's going to make sense. Like, at the end, who are these people? Like, I realize all the black leaders and senators and such like that all getting together, and she thought that was part of the conspiracy, but it's like, who was Black Widow? I don't know. There was a conspiracy, so they were killing people. Like, they killed the Watermelon Man, which was very upsetting. I couldn't stop laughing at that part.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
I love,
it was like
I love
it was like Trinity in the Matrix. He put his hands on the window.
I love Godfrey Cambridge. He's great. I don't want to see him die in anything.
Well, that part kind of stunk because it was like Yaphet Kotto was like, oh, there's all kinds of gay people.
I think his reaction is funny, even though I don't think that's meant to be a joke. I just find the homophobic stuff in this kind of funny.
What did you guys... I feel like this is way too long to not talk about it. What did you think of Scatman Crothers in this?
Scatman Crothers, horny old man.
Out of control.
Well, he's playing a horny preacher.
Yep.
But, part of me feels like it might be a reference to someone of the era, potentially. Because there's the very light political commentary.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's a reference to someone. Or maybe he wanted to have fun with a horny character. I don't know, but either way, it's Scatman, so...
That could be a character from the comic strip, too, you know.
That is true. A
slightly inappropriate preacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's plausible.
Yeah, because he has a way with prayers and beautiful women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know, like, that just adds more to, like, the confusion of, like, the politics and, the meaning of all of it. It's like, okay, so, like, you're mixing politics and religion. Is this trying to say something exactly, or what? And I don't really... It just makes it more confusing.
Yeah, it definitely feels like they were just throwing so much at the canvas to see what stuck, and they were like, it felt like they were trying to create these layers of like, oh yeah, this is like interesting, which again, I do like it, but it's just somehow the plot is too light and too heavy, and I don't understand that.
Yeah.
It seems like we watched a different version too, so like, was it even heavier than I realized based
See,
on what
and maybe I,
saw.
I wonder if there how much of that is different because I remember the tone being so much, and maybe that's just time, and you know, we really didn't miss out on that much except for some boobs, but I just remember the tone being so much more different. I don't know.
Yeah, it's light and fun. This is kind of watching it again may realize. Oh yeah, there's a reason I don't remember this movie, besides the cast.
It definitely does not help, because I watched this, I can't even remember, whatever day I messaged you, Spencer, I was watching it, but then I watched, I think that night I watched Foxy Brown right afterwards, and then I watched Coffee, and, yeah, so it's just, watching it first probably was not the best progression, because I think... those films get better and better in the order that I watch them in. And you lose the plot of this one quick.
Yeah, the big reveal... I don't need a consistent plot necessarily, but this is a movie that it felt like they thought they were telling a cohesive story. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't connect. Like, at the end, where it's like, you see the rich old white man... who I'm not sure if he's even given a name, and he's like, it's all according to plan, like a cartoon character, and then it's like, wait, no, I need more of this.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't skip over this. I need more of whatever this is, because this is just confusing. And then they have, like, the army of people led by Ben Carson, basically, and, like, they have the white guys in blackface with Afro wigs. It's like, okay, you're trying to say something here. Just like a little more time. This is just like too much stuff.
And like the amount of time that you're saying this is how quickly it happens in the movie is the bad thing. It's all of a sudden there's like these white guys in like semi-military type like garb, and then they're just painting each other's faces and they're putting on.
Yeah, they're putting themselves on blackface.
Like, it's literally like they have a paintbrush and they're just like brushing each other's faces. It's the most bizarre thing that happens. It happens and you're like, what the hell? It's so weird.
It's like they didn't really know how to end the thing. They're like, everything comes together. I'm like, no, wait, what do you mean everything?
Yeah, well, and then that last joke where Pam grabs both of her leading men and she's just like, we can stick together. And then it's like, is that a sex joke? Like, are you going to go off with both of them now? It's so...
yes.
I mean, yeah, she fucked Wilma already, but like, it's just so weird. Because, like, because, like, there's...
She'd been with both of those guys, wasn't she? Oh, wasn't one the senator and one was the, the billionaire?
Yeah, Blake...
She's with the... Oh, yeah, she was with both.
Yeah.
I forgot that part. Like,
see, no, that makes sense, though, that you forgot. That's that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, they're, like, and they're, like, a running theme and the version I watch of, like, of dick comments from Yafat Kodo. Where, like, they see, like, the guy, the woman, the waitress at the place, and he's like, he had big muscles, and he has big something else, too. And then a couple more is like, okay, does he have a small dick? What's going on here? Like, or just this how they, or are they just always flirty the whole time? I don't know. Because I kind of wish I would have read the comic strip, because maybe that guy...
I don't know if he's a character in it, though. I really don't know.
Colt Hawkins.
I didn't even know that was his name in the movie. Like, that's how weird the movie is. Because, like, some of the characters, like... I knew, like, Godfrey Cambridge's character name, like, Eartha Kitt's character, but his character, I was never quite sure what his name was, because I didn't do a good enough job to, at least, to me, of establishing, you know, like, even, like, his name, besides, like, it's Yafat Kodo, so, like, you know.
Yeah. Reminded me of the old, like, I used to have a collection of Dick Tracy comics, and those got pretty intense. Like, I wonder if the comic was anything like that. I'm probably, based on, I'm looking it up right now, kind of looks... Yeah.
I think it was the first comic strip with a black female lead in America? Something like that.
And when did it start? I guess... it, like, what, 1970, 1972? Somewhere, or...
What I saw said it ran from 70 to 74.
Yeah,
that's what I'm reading right now.
And so, is this also like the first comic strip book based movie with a black female lead? Like, have there been any others besides this movie?
Comic strip
or comic book, or just like
with a black female lead?
Yeah, I don't think Marvel has dipped into that.
You mean since then, or, I mean, because you like Catwoman.
I forgot that existed.
That's also fair, but
And I feel like there's another one that I'm forgetting, too, but, yeah, I mean, there's not many. What about Deadpool? Isn't that a black woman?
Is Domino black in the comic? I don't care enough about X-Men.
She's not black. She's not black in the comic, but that's, she's definitely not the star either.
Yeah,
she should be.
Yeah, Deadpool 2.
Zazie Beetz.
Yeah, Deadpool 2. 2 about 20 minutes too long. Cut that down.
Well, but have you seen the cut where, you know, he's reading a Christmas story to, I don't know, what's that guy's name? Goofus.
I don't know.
What is that guy's name?
Cable? Who?
No, it's like a knockoff of The Princess Bride, and he's reading to the actor that played the kid.
Fred Savage?
Yes, he's reading to Fred Savage. Oh. It's like the PG-13 version of Deadpool 2.
Mm. Oh, no. So it's like it cuts out anytime something too aggressive happens?
Yeah, I guess. I haven't actually seen it, but I remember it was weird that it got re-released that way.
Yeah, I remember that. I was very confused when it happened.
But, that's kind of delightful, though. I like that. I didn't really care for the first Deadpool movie, so I didn't see the second, but I like that that exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're fine.
Deadpool 2 feels more like an X-Men movie, and yeah. I think is more enjoyable that because mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Deadpool 1, I could take a leave.
Yeah, 2 has Terry Crews, so for maybe 10 minutes, but it's still Terry Crews.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a happy camper there. Oh, and...
No, Friday Foster, though.
Yeah. And the guy who plays It Monster is briefly in Deadpool 2. I think he was in it. Or, yeah, it's one of the Sarsguards is in it briefly.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Okay, so we didn't have to talk about Eartha Kitt. Eartha Kitt is a goddamn legend, just like Pam Grier.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's introduced in the movie, she comes in lashes first. Those are some crazy long eyelashes.
Mm-hmm.
And just like everyone else in the movie, I just wanted more of her. I love her very odd theatrical voice.
I love her voice. Was, yeah.
I don't know if that was like a theater thing, or maybe she really. Yeah, because when we talked about Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, like he talked like Gandhi, but he is from he's from Georgia, and so I really wonder is this like a Elijah Muhammad thing? She's just doing a weird voice. But either way, I love her voice. I just wanted more of her talking and giving, crazy narration to the fashion show.
Yeah, her voice is very, I hate to say this, but it's, very ASMR-y to me. Because it's so... I don't know why it's so satisfying, but it just is. I could hear her... she could say anything. And I just would be completely enthralled.
It's 100% unique. There's nobody else who sounded like her or sounds mm-hmm. like her. Yeah, and it's great because she even does that purr thing that I guess she did.
Yeah, so well.
Yeah. Wait, wasn't she a Catwoman?
Yes, she was.
It was her Angelina Newmar?
There were mm-hmm. three,
okay.
I think. Yeah, I don't know who the third one. It's like the third guy who went to the moon. I don't know who that guy is either.
Okay. Yeah. So, are there any real standout scenes that you guys can remember in Friday Foster? Or...
I mean, my favorite. We've already kind of gone over. It's not even my. It's not a good scene, but the absolutely bananas that she chases. Well, she hunts him down. Into that warehouse, and then he tackles her and then chases her out. Nothing that the characters are doing makes any sense, and I was laughing so hard because it's just he should have just stabbed her, or I don't know, mm-hmm. gave her a stunner or something, as soon as she walked in.
Push her down that elevator shaft that she dropped her $600
no kidding
down, you know. But, I mean, that's the reason that's so good is because of the just random, hearse chase down scene. Really? I don't know if a hearse can do this.
I do her stealing all unique. Of the cars in this because she steals that. She steals the milk truck at one point. It's just her, quirky little, thing she does.
Yeah. It's a nice little running gag. I like the little brother because he's in there just enough.
Yeah, and he's a nice a nice framing device too.
Yeah, because I like that he's smart for his age, but he's not annoyingly smart. And the running gag of the pimp who that feels like a response to other movies of that Pam was in, potentially.
What's his name? Is it is he Fancy? Is that his name?
I think so.
Because, again, I have a hard time knowing who is who in this. What their actual character name is. I know who the actors are, but...
Mm.
Yeah, but, I just love the running gag of him with his
closet.
They're always... Yeah. Yeah, and the pimp's women are always chewing gum every time you see them. And it just feels like him being like a complete idiot. This feels like, okay, they're commenting on like the whole pimp stereotype, because this is 75. Superfly has happened already. Mr. Trouble Man has happened. I think that's what I'm thinking of. And like Willie Dynamite, I think, had happened. So like they're definitely responding to like the whole pimp character thing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like.
Yeah. Well, it's the opposite of in Idiocracy with Maya Rudolph, mm-hmm. and that one guy who keeps giving her money. So like, yeah, we'll meet up later. Yeah, we sure will. And then never shows up.
I can't believe you reference Idiocracy.
I only know three movies. Friday Foster, Idiocracy, and what was the one I mentioned earlier? Anyway. I have to... If I had to pick my favorite scene, because I did like a lot of the movie. Like, there's very little of the movie that I just think it's a lot of fun.
It is fun. It's just kind of fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tie between the scene where Carl Weathers almost catches Pam Grier in the shower, where we didn't get to see the nudity, but that's okay. It was kind of like this giallo-esque thing, because he was just like slowly going through the house.
Oh yeah.
And she was in the shower not observing, and like he like gets to the point where he's just standing in the doorway, and he's got this look on his face, like not that he's like aroused by her, but that like he knows this is I'm going to kill this woman, you know, kind of thing. And then when she manages to get out of, you know, away from him and runs into the hallway, and there's that, you know, the mom and her kids trying to get into the thing, like he still comes around the corner and he's like, he looks
insane.
Like, he looks
yeah.
like a killer,
completely, you know? Deranged.
And I think it really works. But to counterpoint that, the whole Yaphet Kotto versus Carl Weathers running across the rooftops thing, where it becomes like a cartoon. And there's that part where he puts the board across the roof, and I was like, neither of those men are going to be able to go across this. But of course they do, somehow. And then when Yaphet Kotto finally shoots him, and he just, oh, you know, he's got his arms wide open.
Yeah, the board thing, like, I just beat Last of Us recently. It's like, oh, this is us, Joel and Ellie going on an adventure right now.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't on the roof, is there... I don't know if I'm confusing this with something else I watched recently, but isn't there a part where, like, one of them, like, gets on top of where the door is? Like, it's just, like, a box on the roof. One of them somehow gets up there and then just hops down and, like, karate chops the other, like, out of nowhere?
Carl Weathers somehow, like, teleports on top
of... Yeah, it's a teleportation.
Yeah.
He has a scroll.
After Yaphet Kotto crosses the board. Yeah.
I mean, I loved it, because it's like that happens, and right after it's the, what am I doing here? So bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but my favorite is the hearse car chase, is the hearse one, because there is my second favorite shot of a stunt person ever. My first favorite shot of a stunt person is when I say this, you guys might know what I'm talking about, BMX Bandits.
Oh,
Nicole Kidman's stunt double. That's my favorite ever. And my second favorite ever is the stunt driver for Pam Grier is clearly a man and wearing the wrong type of wig. And like when you see the profile, flat chest, and it's like, oh, okay, they did a real shitty job of the stunt driver here. And like if you pay attention, it's one of the most glaring shots of a stunt driver I've seen in a long time.
Mm.
Although not as good as the BMX Bandits, where like suddenly Nicole Kidman has these really broad, manly shoulders out of nowhere.
That has to be on YouTube, that clip, because I know exactly what you're talking about. Surely that's somewhere out there.
Yeah, that movie's kind of blah, but goddamn, I love that those scenes. Oh, and going off like. The whole, like, the funness of the movie. It's also just, like, I think it's just more competently constructed compared to, like, other movies, at least the version I saw, because like construction in terms of like set design and costume, like that, like there was, it felt more professional compared to some other like exploitation movies, like of exploitation movies around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like I think maybe that just helps, like because if it wasn't as like sharply made, production wise, it would just be a slog to get through. It'd be like Blackenstein shit, but it's not. It's like, okay, it's pretty to look at, and this kind of flies by, and you forget about it.
I also really like the music.
I do too. Yeah, the theme is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and
Friday.
Yeah, and there's a lot of mixing of red, white, and gold in the movie. And like there's a lot of like costumes that are red, white, and gold, and like the ice cream truck has red, white, and that's a red, white, red, green, and gold, and like there's all over the movie like people wearing those colors. It really sticks out. Like when Eartha Kitt is dying, she's wearing a lime green costume dress, whatever,
mm-hmm.
over with a red background. And it's like, it really sticks out, like, once you notice, like, red and green, it's always paired together. Like, again, stuff like that just makes it feel like, okay, like, they were actually trying to make, like, a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of, I don't know, I feel like there has to be, like, a longer cut, but maybe a longer cut probably would not be as good, I imagine.
And I don't mean to like trash. I do like the movie. I'm not trashing it. It's just I don't know how else to say it. It's because it's too. It's like very very convoluted and like muddled, but also there's not enough there. And I don't. It's like, I guess like if they could have just stretched the ending out to more of the middle of the movie and like put more in with the plot there, because it's just like. It feels like a Scooby-Doo episode where it just all of a sudden it's like, like, oh, like we're ruined because of this. And it's you know, damn dirty kids did it. It's just, it's over in a flash and so much happens. It's so bizarre. I don't know. So I think that's really my problem with it. It's fun and it's a very entertaining movie. It's not boring, it's not hard to get through, and it's not long. What's the runtime on this? Isn't it just like a little over an hour and a half,
something like that?
Yeah, and
it feels shorter, and it feels like an 80 minute movie.
Yeah,
at least to me.
No, it definitely feels quick. It doesn't, well, I mean, unless you watch it on the Brown Sugar app, then you're going to have a lot of weird cuts, but it doesn't overstay its welcome at all.
Yeah, and also like I think maybe part of why I don't like it as much is this was Godfrey Cambridge's last movie. He died the next year. He was like 42 or 43. He wasn't that old,
mm-hmm.
but he was working on a TV movie where he was Idi Amin, and he had a heart attack on the set and died.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and like. After seeing him and Watermelon Man and Cotton Comes to Harlem, it's kind of like, oh, he's kind of my favorite character actors, because like his work is very very sparse, but I just genuinely love seeing him on screen. I love his very like New York like how to say it without being offensive, like New York Jewish accent that he has that is very bizarre that I don't expect from him, but like. I just find him, like, hilarious, and I wish he would have gotten a bigger film career, but he, you know, the universe didn't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, so with Pam, I should, just some, like, basic stuff about her. She's born in North Carolina, military family, they moved around a lot. She's born in 49, so she turned 71 this year. And her first movie was Beyond a Valley of Dolls, but apparently the scene was cut.
Yeah, because I was reading something where someone was talking about Maybe Jack Hill. Yeah, you know what? It was an interview with Jack Hill where he said he, and he wasn't like bragging, he just, a thing he said offhanded that he discovered Pam. And someone had like commented, they were like, no, she was in stuff before this. And it's like, I don't even think her scene made it into the movie. I could be wrong. I've never seen her in it. So if she's in the background somewhere, I don't know where it is because I've seen that movie.
I have the Criterion of it, but I have not seen her in it.
Yeah.
And apparently, on Projection Booth, she was interviewed like last year or something, and she said, if I remember correctly, she said Russ cut the scene that she was in, but who knows? But yeah, she's working consistently from that to now. She's on Bless This Mess, sitcom with Dax Shepard and
Oh yeah, on ABC.
the doctor from Children's Hospital. I forgot her name.
Oh yeah, I don't remember that actress's name.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Children's Hospital?
No, Bless This Mess.
It's okay. I watched some with my parents recently. It's okay.
It does seem
But
like
Pam was in
something
it.
that parents would really appreciate.
Yeah, it's a nice, safe sitcom that you can watch with your family. It's yeah, I feel like maybe the replacement for Modern Family since that's going away. But yeah, Pam has never married, but she has had some high profile partners. She dated Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Freddie Prinze, and Richard Pryor. And yeah, so like I was surprised when I realized, oh, she was actually a huge star in the 70s, because like I always forget like Foxy Brown and shit like that was actually like a big box office hit, because
Yeah.
like I'm so used to like
'Cause the
thinking of these
way
movies like, oh yeah, sorry.
No, you're but the way people it's crazy because the way people talk about it is like these are like B pictures, like they're less than, but it's like they were huge. They were very successful. Like it after Coffee, she skyrocketed.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, it's kind of like when I hear people talk about Twin Peaks as like, oh yeah, Twin Peaks was the first season was a huge hit. It's like, it was? And it's like, oh yeah, it's just like, you know, the like mainstream people don't care about it anymore or whatever. But like, it's just kind of weird how stuff transfers over through culture over time. But
Well, yeah, and that's like with, and to his credit, like Jack Hill has always given her like a lot of credit for the stories that they told together, because while he wrote and directed, she, there's a lot of things that they took from, I mean, and she said that being in a military family, like she always made friends really easily, and they did travel around. Like I think they were in England for like 3 or 5 years, and she was really popular. But she, it was important to her to tell the story of her people, to tell things that were important in the black community, and he just went with it. Like he listened to her because he obviously, that's, they're not experiences that he had that he couldn't understand, but he was happy to, collaborate and help her tell those stories, which is, I don't know, it's just so, I mean, if anyone has the opportunity to, there's a lot of really great interviews with Jack out there. But his perspective from all of that is so interesting because it's like he, after he did, I think it was Foxy Brown, he was approached by other directors at the time that said they wanted to make these type of films, that they wanted to make blaxploitation specifically because, his films had been so successful. And he would get questions from other directors and producers that were like, so how do you make movies for those people? How do you do that? And he would be kind of perplexed, like innocently, like, what do you mean? And they would be like, well, what do they think is funny? What do they think, what do they like? And he just still wasn't connecting. Like, what do you mean? And he's like, for a black audience? And like immediately he would just be like, all right, like, I'm not gonna entertain this any longer, and would just like cut the interview or cut whatever line of questioning was, because he's like, that's not like a thought I had. He's like, I wasn't trying to, because all of it was a collaboration with her, you know, or with his actors. Like, he would listen to them. So I don't know. I just, he's a very interesting guy.
Yeah. And arguably his best movie, at least in my opinion, Switchblade Sisters, kind of killed his director career for a bit, which was, I think, maybe the biggest bomb of his career, which kind of sucks because I do genuinely love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he did like some fantasy movie in the early 80s that I think he tried to Alan Smithy because he was very ashamed of the movie. I forgot, it's during the fantasy boom, post Conan, that era stuff.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, so
can we stop for a second? Hold on. I gotta step away for a second.
Oh,
yep.
Okay. So I want to go into like our favorite Pam Grier movies. We can like kind of talk about like why we like them. Well, Joel, you didn't do any homework, but you've seen a few, so you can talk about.
I've seen, yeah, I've already mentioned every single one I've seen. So my favorite is Friday Foster.
Is it Jackie Brown for you?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, she's great. You know, she's undeniably great mm-hmm. in that. But I wouldn't, you know, like, it feels like a disservice to be like, that's my favorite Pam Grier movie. words.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we did an episode on it, so here are our thoughts on it. I want to clarify, I don't hate it. It was the first time I watched it in like 8 years. And I have changed as a person. So,
yeah, you hate a lot of stuff now. That's how you changed.
Yeah,
that happens. I have a lot of friends that I remember, we all worked in a movie theater together, and they loved everything that came out. Like, The Love Guru came out, they went and watched it, they were all for it, and now they hate everything. I'm like, there was a time where you sat through The Love Guru and you were happy. What changed?
Hmm. I like most things. If you read my letterbox, I rarely give anything less than 3 stars. I'm pretty forgiving for the mm-hmm. most part. Yeah, but yeah, you can hear my thoughts on... It's more... I feel differently towards Tarantino now than I did 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't?
That's true. People change. Maybe I'll be into it later, 10 years from now. But yeah. So just Jackie Brown, not Bill and Ted, or.
if I had to choose one of those other movies I mentioned, I guess out of the three, Mars Attacks is my favorite.
That's fair.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in years.
It holds up. It's fun. I think it holds up. That probably doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. Your opinion does, at least here. I haven't seen it in a very long time either. But I remember people really disliking it when mm-hmm. it came out. And me being like, oh man, this movie's great. Like, it's weirdly violent. And it's just like, it's just a different, you know, non-goth Tim Burton movie. I think that's what people were like, what?
It's pretty cool that he followed up his best movie, Ed Wood, with like a fun, campy sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
That was a follow-up, right? Ted Wood? I'm trying to think of anything was in between there. I don't think so.
I'm not sure,
but that feels right.
Because it would have been like Edward Scissorhands, Ed Wood, Mars Attacks, then Sleepy Hollow? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure my sister would have rented 10,000 times at Blockbuster when I was little.
He had a good run. I really liked Sleepy Hollow, too.
I still like
that one, yeah.
I've never seen it. It's still in my mind a stupid movie my sister likes. I can't get over that.
There's actually a couple of scenes of Christopher Walken that, like, I mean, I didn't get scared as a kid, like, about anything. And I was like, ooh, that's kind of creepy.
Okay, show off.
No, that's not showing off at all. Hey, it's fine that you were scared of the VHS cover. It happens to the best of them.
That's true.
But yeah. No, I was very desensitized, I think, so.
Yeah, but I've been meaning to watch Sleepy Hollow as an adult. It's just, in my head, it's still like this, the dumb movie my sister likes. Which,
and it always will be.
Yeah, I'm like that with like, I was like with Clueless for years, and then I watched Clueless.
And it's
for
great. That podcast. Yeah.
That you and I guess that's where we met officially, Joel.
Over Clueless? You guys bonded?
Yeah, we went to the mall. Yeah. And,
yeah, it's a long story. It's not for here. But
no, we were both on the minute by minute.
Yeah.
As if Clueless podcast, so.
Yeah, it's trying to be up. That should still be up, and I think we did Point X Door together too. I think.
I mean, I was also on that. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know if that's where we met. Something like that.
The only one of Darren's projects I have not participated in is this was a huge mistake because Arrested Development has never really been in my sights. That's a weird way of saying it. I just haven't watched it.
Okay. Is it because it's a comedy?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. That checks out for you. Anyway, Melanie, what's your favorite Pam movies?
You know, I think Coffee is probably my favorite. I think it's definitely there's something about Jack Hill's films that are a little bit, I mean, they're definitely grittier. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of, it's heavily sexualized, but his overall storytelling, even the cinematography, like everything in his films, it just feels a little bit tighter. It's just a little bit better. And like, if you go back and watch the opening scene of Coffee, like, it's lit and filmed like a horror film. It is, I mean, I was blown away, and I've seen that movie, you know, several times before, but it still gets me. But I mean, beyond that, I would have to say, like, Coffee's definitely my number one. I love Foxy Brown, but Jackie Brown's really high up there for me. Probably more just because that's how I was introduced to her. But that scene of, you know, her and Robert talking over coffee and listening to the Delphonics is so fucking good. Like, it still hits every single time I watch it. And it's still just like, I don't know. It's like him watching her put the record on and just like having a character moment of like him falling in love with her. It totally works for me. And I'm just still blown away by it. And it's probably just Quentin's ability to curate a really good soundtrack, but they're phenomenal in that scene. So it's really high up there for me, but Coffee's definitely my number one.
Okay. I have to copy you because Coffee is my number one as well. I always meet people say they like Foxy Brown more. So I always felt weird to say I like Coffee more, but like, Foxy Brown just, like, it's just not as good as Coffee, because, like, Foxy Brown was, I think, the first one I ever watched with, one of the first ones I saw, but, like, it didn't really hit me, but Coffee was like, oh, holy shit, mm-hmm. this is great, because, like, I believe it's the one where she has the shotgun.
Yeah.
In the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, like, that opening was at, like, 16, I was like, okay, this is a real fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it always stuck with me. And also at 16, I like the nudity, of course.
At 16, you were like Pam Grier. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, Black Mama, White Mama, I genuinely love, even though, because it's like a mishmash of everything I love in exploitation movies. It's Little Women, Prison, it's a little, just like really mean spirited. You have Sid Haig.
Mm-hmm.
You have like some political stuff of like the rebels, and it's set in the Philippines. And if an exploitation movie from the 70s is set in the Philippines, or Southeast Asia in general, I am going to at least really like it. For some reason, I love that setting. Like, even, like, shitty movies, like Lady Terminator, I'm like, oh, no, like, it's like, okay, if it's set anywhere in that region, like, okay, I'm on board. I just love seeing that region and, like, kind of... I should say, I know Lady Terminator's not the 70s, but I just love, like, B-movies from that shot in that region. But,
Might as well be.
Yeah, might as well be. But, And the arena I watched, that really caught me off guard, because that movie is, man, that is something else. Mm-hmm. It's edited by Joe Dante, and cinematography by Joe D'Amato, which I never thought Joe D'Amato and Pam Grier would ever cross paths, but they did. And like, the first act of the movie is the sleazy, like, gladiator movie, like, with nudity you expect, but then it turns into, like, literal class warfare of the gladiator slaves versus, like, the people in power, and it's like, okay, this is pretty cool, but, like, every other scene is good. It's a weird movie, but I do recommend it if, like, you like the sleazier side and movies that are just, like, really odd and messy.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, buy a copy, like, a one sheet of the poster, because it's amazing.
Yeah, the poster does not lie. And the women did their own stunts with, like, real weapons, apparently, which it really shows, because, like, it's kind of awkward in a way of, like, they don't want to hurt each other, but at the same time, it's like, oh, they're actually doing their own shit, and, like, it's always cool to see that. And Scream, Blackula, Scream. I like the first Blackula, okay, but this one is just fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And just the clash of Pam being a voodoo priestess and Dracula, like, clashing. That's just, like, a really cool idea. And yeah, but I don't know. I just kind of like pretty much anything she's in. Yeah, so.
It's always watchable. She, like, I don't even, like, I mean, Bill and Ted, it's like, that's like a tiny little thing, but it's still, she's always a delight. Like, every single time she brings it.
Yeah. Pam is great. She's on Twitter, and you can follow her. She really follows back, and she's like, she is chill. Like, when she's not acting, she's chilling at her ranch farm in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Probably smoking weed. I bet she's a fun hang. At least she seems like a fun hang.
Mm-hmm. And there's something oddly comforting. Like, obviously I'm at an age where I don't know, like, what I'm going to do, kids, marriage, all that stuff. But it's like, Pam Grier didn't get married, didn't have kids. She's just out on a ranch in Colorado, like, chilling. I'm like, that's comforting.
Yeah. It's just... Yeah, and like, I don't know. Joel, do you have any thoughts? Any final thoughts?
The only thing I have left to say would be that, Pam, I'm available.
I think he listens to their show, John Cross from the After Movie Diner. He met Pam at some horror con thing. And she apparently stroked his beard. And if you ask him about it, he will tell you a story. In every podcast he can mention it on, he will bring that up every single time.
I would.
Excellent.
If she touched me anywhere, I would tell everyone about it.
Yeah. And I say it because I'm jealous of John. I wish that would have been me instead. But, yeah. And, oh, before we do the final recommendations thing, actually, I think both of you will care. Today is the 25th birthday of Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I saw you posted about it, and I almost posted music today, but I didn't. I got busy, and then I saw you did, and I was like, okay, so it's covered.
Yeah, yeah. It's, that might be my favorite game soundtracks ever.
Solid. It's. I mean, that's a good choice.
Yeah, if I'm talking hot take, warm take. Chrono Trigger is perfect, but I like Chrono Cross a little more because there's a lot more party options and variety to play with. But Chrono Trigger, like, is kind of like the best RPG of its era. And I include Final Fantasy VII when I say that.
That is a bold statement.
Yes. I'm not a big fan of VII, personally.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Earthbound will always be my favorite RPG from that era.
Hmm.
I never played Earthbound. I never played it.
Well, I don't recommend it because only I should be allowed to play it.
Yeah, it's just for you. I get it.
Yeah.
Hogging all the Ness and Lucas over there.
There's no Lucas. Lucas is from Mother 3, so he doesn't belong.
All right, whatever you say.
Jeez!
Yeah, and the 1975 was kind of a big year. I covered some in the Fred Williamson episode, so listen to that. Not a lot of numbers on that one, but that was a fun time. The Grindvin guys will return for another secret episode, but I won't say what it is here, but they are going to come back, and hopefully Joel can be on this one. And it's a topic, Joel, that you'll be more familiar with.
All right. At
that. So, 75, a lot of shit came out. So we can start with the guest.
Well, okay, so it's kind of rough to pick because, like, they're almost everything that year is so well known. I mean, it's insane, but I would say, I mean, since we talked about Jack Hill, I have to say Switchblade Sisters, it is one of my favorite. It's not my favorite of his, but it's really, really good. So I would highly recommend that. Again, I don't know if I should actually recommend this one, because it's not that I think it's a good movie. I just want other people to watch it and tell me what they thought, because I was very bothered by it. Mandingo. It's rough.
Slavery movies are just weird in general.
Yeah, that's why it's not a recommendation so much as just I watched it, so you should watch it, and we can go through it together because it's rough.
Oh, Pam is in the sequel to Mandingo Drum, but Drum fucking sucks and don't bother.
Yeah, me. Yeah. And then last, I would say, I think didn't the sequel to Cleopatra Jones come out that year? I'm pretty sure.
Yes,
Casino
it did.
Gold. Yeah, it's 75. I would say watch both of those movies. It's definitely, I don't think they're as tight as the Jack Hill films, but,
Oh no.
Yeah, it's there, but I still think they're worth watching. I think those are important movies. So definitely go check them out.
Tamara Dobson, the tallest lean woman ever.
Yeah, 6'2".
Yep. Not as good an actress, but she has good presence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go next. A little movie called Fox and His Friends, the Rainer Werner Fassbinder. I'm very, very slowly going through Fassbinder movies, which means I'll see all of them in 15 years, because he has so goddamn many movies.
Yeah, so prolific and he died young. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and Fox and His Friends is, I see it usually called his best movie, which I didn't know, but, this guy named Fox, he, wins a lottery after losing his job at the circus because they get raided for some reason, and then he makes these rich friends, and these rich friends are kind of this taking advantage of him, and it's him kind of slowly realizing what's happening, and it's about fate and other stuff like that. And it's a very gay movie, and you get to see a whole lot of penis. And if you want to see Rainer Werner Fassbinder's penis, watch this movie.
I don't.
Well, yeah, but if you do, it's available to you.
And the guy from Ollie Fears the Soul is in it, his lover at the time, and you see his penis again.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't. Do you? There's so much penis in that movie. But it's a kind of a sad, depressing movie, but it's also really fucking good. Just be aware, like, it will be a big bummer by the end of the night. But the Man from Hong Kong, Brian Trenchard Smith movie, it's one of those action movies that when you watch it now, it's like, oh, you can't make this anymore. Because there's a real sense of someone could have died making this. To the point that, like, George Lazenby is a villain and he is on fire during a fight at one point. And it's like, oh, James Bond is on fire. Anything can happen in this movie. And there's like a whole bunch of crazy, dangerous stunts. And it's a great bass action movie. It's a little long, but I don't mind it because, like, just the stunt work and action sequences are so fucking good that it's like, yeah, it's worth it just to see, like, the real, genuine danger in this. Which I will say, I like that we have safety precautions now. But at the same time, we can't make movies like that anymore. So it's kind of a trade-off of, like, they get less extreme, but people, you know, are safer. And the other one. Oh, Zulawski, that most important thing, love. It's a Zulawski movie. If you've seen Possession, you know what to expect. A lot of intense emotions, sex, other stuff, but it's really good, and it'll kind of fuck you up emotionally for a little bit afterwards.
Yeah, that's just him.
Yeah, a little bit. J-Dog.
I haven't watched anything revelatory or strictly unknown from 1975 because like was previously said, it's a movie full of or a year full of movies. It's like you need to watch that movie. So that's mostly what I've watched. Like the most obscure thing I'd watched was Take a Hard Ride, which is a kind of a blaxploitation spaghetti western, but it's not very good. So I'm going to read the movies I have on my watch list instead. And I don't really know much about some of these, so I'm just gonna name them off. Maybe you guys know and can fill me in. The first one is Karate Bullfighter. Either.
Sonny Chiba. I'm well aware of that movie.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I remember Elliot Kalin talking about it a long time ago on one of the episodes of the Flophouse,
Yeah,
and I just added
it's
it.
part of a trilogy of movies about I forgot the guy's name. He's a karate master who trained Sonny Chiba. And it's a series of biopic action movies that Sonny Chiba did, kind of honoring him. And because he was still alive at the time. And it's like Karate for Life, Karate Bullfighter, Bullfighter, Karate Bear Fighter. I forgot to order. But,
Then the
yeah.
last one is Karate Sandwich Eater, which it must be when he was older. The second movie is Listomania.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it's
Which,
really good.
from what I understand, this Ken Russell guy, he's really gonna be something once people recognize his work. I'm dying to see that one, honestly.
The only version on streaming kind of sucks, but it's movie's good enough that it, you know, you can still, it's still fine. I wish it was fixed up, but like,
Sure.
yeah, it's very excessive and crazy, and it might annoy you.
The
I've seen some
imagery
people
is
hate it.
amazing.
Yeah, but I've seen some
I
people
do.
hate this movie because it's so in your face constantly the whole time.
Yeah, it sounds irritating. I can't wait.
Okay.
The next one is a movie called The Wind and the Lion, which is a John Milius movie, which, that guy's crazy. And then it's Sean Connery playing an Arab man. Actually, I don't know what race he's supposed to be, but his character's name is Mullal Ahmed Ar. Anyways, it's Sean Connery. It doesn't make any sense. But I don't even know if that's any good. I just put it on the watch list. Another more obscure thing called Rafferty and the Gold Dust Twins. It's something I saw pop up in Brian Sauer in his watch or diary, rather. So I just tossed it on there because he and I usually have a similar taste in movies. He hosts the what is that called?
Just the Discs.
He does Just the Disc, and he does the other Pure one we Cinema. Mentioned earlier. Yeah, Pure Cinema. Yeah,
that former guest cool Travis guy. Wood has appeared on
many times. He's
oh, yeah. only one time. His other
damn it.
His other podcast had like Ryan Johnson on.
I'm Ryan. Sorry. Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's making a.
Did he play Angry Birds on it? Black Moon, Louis Malle.
I don't know how to explain that movie. I like it, but I hear I'm a minority for liking that movie.
I don't like it.
All right,
but you'll great. Probably enjoy it.
I don't know.
There's, yeah, it's a weird artsy-fartsy movie.
Sure. Something called The Devil's Reign, which I probably heard about on Shockwaves, because the only person I know who's seen it is Rob G. Satanists in the Middle West terrorize and sometimes melt the terrified locals. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen this, but I think I know the cover of that. It looks cool.
Yeah. The name is familiar, but I have yet to see it. I think they talked about it on one Pure Cinema episode. Like, a while maybe it was ago.
Yeah, and the other two I have on the list are Switchblade Sisters and Mirror, the Tarkovsky movie.
Tarkovsky? Who's that guy?
Yeah. I don't know. But
does he make...
I never recovered after watching that one movie, so...
Ours movie's 80 minutes long and light and breezy?
I'd call them popcorn fare, you know.
Okay, I'll check out this Stalker movie you're talking about. Or Mirror, whatever it was. I ruined the joke. Let's move on.
I'm done. Okay. Yeah, that's all I have for 1975. No other movies were made, so.
Okay, so, Joel, I just looked at Twitter for a second and saw former guest Marcus Penn tweeted something about Chameleon Street. Wendell yes. B. Harris was in Road Trip.
Road Trip?
Yeah, the comedy from the early 2000s. He was in Road Trip.
I don't know.
And he was in Out of Sight. As a, yeah.
Is...
What?
Yeah, the star of Chameleon Street was in Road Trip and Out of Sight. I never knew that.
Okay. I love Out of Sight. Yeah. Road Trip, I'm not... I don't think I know which one that is.
Yeah, in my head, that's... Is that the one with Tom Green, or is that...
Yeah, Tom Green. I think Breckenmeyer.
Oh, it's Breckenmeyer. Why didn't you say so?
Amy Smart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, in high school, I like certain scene in that movie with Amy Smart.
There's only one Breckenmeyer movie, and we already talked about it minute by minute.
Yes. Okay, so... I don't know when I'll release this, but a week or two, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so around this time, I don't even know what will come out. Maybe the Crooklyn episode. That was a fun one to record. Or maybe the Burnt by the Sun. One of those two. Which, watch Burnt by the Sun, Crooklyn. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe watch it.
Maybe you should just get the soundtrack.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But, yeah, so, J-Dog, you have stuff to promote?
Yeah, I'm actually doing a one-man tour, going to be running around the country. I haven't booked any locations, but if you see a scruffy-looking guy on the side of the road, please pick me up.
Okay.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay.
Other than the Secret Project.
We can ask the guest about the Secret Project. I think
they sure. Super awesome. Secret Project.
It's okay. Super secret.
Yeah. And Melanie, you got, I believe you produce Cinema Parlor?
I do. I produce Cinema Parlor, and me and Nolan kind of run their Twitter, but I will be on a few upcoming episodes of that. I, for my birthday, they don't know this yet, but it's already half of them know about it, the other half do not, but they're going to record a very special horror space episode in honor of my birth, so that's going to be exciting. That's a few months away, but I'm already looking forward to it.
Without giving away your birthday, is it June?
It is in June.
Okay. Me and Joel's birthdays are in June, a day apart.
Mine's the 22nd.
What?
So you have the same birthday as Spencer?
Really?
No, I'm 24. You're 23.
Oh, wait. She's 22nd, I'm 23rd, and you're 24. Oh, yeah. Holy this shit. This is a match made in heaven.
Yeah, let's end it here. No, but I recorded the Fix Files Canada with Kessler and on the Female Prison Scorpion series. It's Kessler. I don't know when he releases these things. He's busy directing short films and shit.
A little bit busy, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit busy. But he has enough time to play fucking Bloodborne and watch like 50 movies a day somehow.
That's work ethic. He's got it.
Yeah. Getting that money from the Canadian government to make movies. Okay, whatever. But, that and my site, Jailhouse 701 Japanese Cult Cinema. I just did a Juzo Itami review on a Western movie, Tales of a Golden Geisha. It's on Criterion Channel if you want to watch it. It's not as good as the other ones, but there's a lot of interesting stuff, and, it might be the worst Itami movie, but it's still, you know, pretty good. And there's other stuff. I did a Joe Shishido retrospect, because he died earlier this year. Rest in peace, Joe. He's a goddamn legend. And, that's it. See you guys next time.
Yeah. Did you thank the guest?
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.
Did you thank the guest?
Oh, well, thank you, Melanie.